This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. I'm going to get to the poetry portion of our program in just about 5 minutes with Giovanni Singleton, the author of Ascension, and Lorena Wolfman, author of My Mother's Necklace. But before I do, I want you to hear about 5 minutes of a very special segment that aired a couple of times on KRCB last month. I'm going to play it now just as it was aired previously, and then we will get back to some poetry. Thanks for listening to this very important segment. This is Catherine Hastings. Normally, when you hear my voice, I'm introducing a poet on my program Word Temple here on KRCB. But tonight I've left Poetry World behind to bring a very important cause to your attention and to introduce two special guests, C.J. Banasek and his mother, Heather. Petaluma resident C.J. Banasek is 11 years old. He's an avid reader, a writer who also loves Legos, basketball, soccer, and baseball. In February of this year, he had a stubborn nosebleed and was feeling pretty draggy for a few days. Not himself. On the 21st of that month, he was diagnosed with a rare form of leukemia, chronic myelogenous leukemia, a cancer of the blood cells. The Banasek spent 2 weeks after receiving this diagnosis in the hospital at UCSF, where they learned that a bone marrow transplant is the only thing that will cure CJ. No one in their family is a good match, and a transplant team at UCSF is actively looking to see whether there is a good match for CJ through a national registry. We're going to get back to how bone marrow matches are determined and how you might be able to help in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away. But first, CJ, who has been out of school while he takes oral chemotherapy, is going to step up to the mic to read a short story he wrote while he was in the hospital called Leukemia. This story won a regional award for submissions by 4th through 6th graders. Here now is CJ Banasek.
It all started with the nosebleed. I just got home from my sister's volleyball tournament and was about to go to bed when all of a sudden, blood started gushing from my nose. It was my third nosebleed of the day, so my mom took me to Petaluma Valley Hospital. My nosebleed stopped when I was there, but they still wanted to draw some blood. They sent me home after that, but they said they would call about the blood test results. Unfortunately, they had our office number, so no one heard the phone ring. It was about 1:30 a.m. when my mom heard a knock at the door. When she answered it, there was a police officer who sent us straight back to the hospital. When we got there, they immediately put something in my arm called an IV, which entered fluid into me. They sent me over to UCSF in San Francisco in an ambulance. When we got there, they told us that my white blood cell count was extremely high and that I had to stay there for a while. After I got through the longest night in history, I found out I was in for a long, hard day. They told me I have leukemia, cancer of the blood. They also told me that they're going to have to draw some bone marrow to find out what kind of leukemia I have. They found out I have CML, a kind of leukemia that mostly elderly people get. Only 5% of kids with leukemia get it, and pretty much one in a million. The next day, they put me on my main medication, which came with side effect. I threw up for the first time in my life that night. After that, there wasn't much to do for many days. I just watched TV, received many presents, and slept. I named my IV Robbie after my friend who follows me around all day just like the machine. When I go home, that won't be the end. I'll have to go back to the hospital at the end of the school year if nothing goes wrong. When I go back, I'll have to get a bone marrow transplant. That's actually good news because then my leukemia will be gone for good and I could live a normal life. I am a cancer survivor.
Thank you, CJ. You're not only a very good writer, but you're a good reader, too. So, Heather, I know that you and your husband, Cass, have been very busy since learning of CJ's diagnosis, and you're hoping to find a bone marrow match by this summer. What have you done so far?
Well, as you said, neither of us are matches for CJ, and neither is our daughter, Gabrielle. So he is now in the National Bone Marrow Registry. And the more we learned about it, the more we realized obviously, the more members we can get enrolled into that registry, the better the chances for CJ and for other people who need a bone marrow transplant. So what we decided to do is I am a board member of the Fabulous Women of Petaluma. It's a local nonprofit group. And we decided we would basically throw a big party that included the opportunity to join the registry. So two Saturdays ago, April 7th, at Petaluma Valley Athletic Club, we had really an amazing event. There were about 2,000 people that showed up.
Wow.
It was really a fun family day. There was a tennis tournament and a barbecue, and it was a gorgeous day. So people really hung out and sat around on the grass and picnicked. But what we came away with is we swabbed almost 700 people, so added a whole lot of names to the national registry, and we raised about $40,000 for the Be the Match Foundation. So it was quite an extraordinary success.
That is amazing. That's really, really good work. I hear that the California Golden Bears baseball team at UC Berkeley has agreed to be swabbed also. How did that come about?
Well, actually, one of our neighbors is, he has a friend whose son plays on the team. And while CJ was in the hospital, our neighbor posted a picture of CJ along with his own sons just on Facebook, and as he was going down memory lane and hoping for CJ to get back home as soon as possible. And one of those pictures, CJ was wearing a Cal Bears t-shirt. And so the assistant coach from the Bears contacted us and asked CJ if he wanted to be a bat boy for a game. And he did, and they were wonderful. They treated him so well, and CJ had a great time. And after that, the coach told the team the reason that CJ was a bat boy, and they all expressed an interest in donating. So a lot of them, 18 guys that day, added their names to the registry, which was a wonderful surprise.
That's great. Well, tell our listeners now what they can do to help.
Again, our main goal now is to add names into the registry. The National Bone Marrow Registry, the main way you go into that, the main way you join is you go to bethematch.org. And all you have to do is order a cheek swab, and they can mail it to you. And then you simply swab your own cheeks and you mail it back. There are some basic guidelines you have to, parameters you have to meet. You have to be between 18 and 60 years old. You have to be in good health. And if you go onto the website, it tells you a lot more about the health guidelines. And the main thing is you can't put yourself into a specific registry just for CJ. You have to be willing to donate to any patient in need. So it was very sweet because a lot of people said, well, I just want to donate to CJ. Mm-hmm. But I think, yeah, but I think once people are affected by CJ's story, they realize there's a whole lot of CJs out there, and there's a whole lot of adults out there all waiting for a perfect match. There's about 9.5 million people in the registry and 7,000 people still waiting for a match. So 7,000 people is a lot of people. So we're really hoping that somebody from Petaluma, if they're not CJ's match, then at least maybe they can help. They can be somebody else's match. My husband and I would both love to be matches now too.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't in the registry before this, and we thought, what a wonderful way to help change a life.
Absolutely. And save a life.
Yes.
Thank you, CJ and Heather Banasek. Hopefully there are a lot of people out there listening right now who will get swabbed.
Thank you. And if you wanted to keep track of CJ as in his journey through fighting CML, we have a Facebook page called CJ Updated. And you do have to request to be a friend on there, but we accept anybody because it's really nice to have people supporting him and watching as he goes through each of the steps of fighting his CML. So you can go to Facebook and CJ Updated, but most importantly, just go to bethematch.org and get your cheek swabbed.
Great. Thank you very much. This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. My next guest is Giovanni Singleton, lowercase g, lowercase s. She is the author of Ascension, released in 2012 by Counterpath Press, and it was nominated for a California Book Award, which is pretty cool. We're going to talk about the book and hear some poems in just a minute, but first, Giovanni Singleton, let's talk about you. I'm going to start by reading the bio that appears in the book, and then maybe you can fill us in on a little more. Giovanni Singleton is a poet, teacher, and founding editor of Nocturnes, Review of the Literary Arts, a journal dedicated to the work of artists and writers of the African diaspora and other contested spaces. A recipient of a new Langton Bay Area Award Show for Literature, she frequently presents on writing, editing, and graphic design at schools and conferences, including the American Literature Association and Spelman College. She has been a fellow at the Squaw Valley Community of Writers, Kaveh Kanem, and the Napa Valley Writers Conference. Her work has appeared on the building of Yerba Buena Center for the Arts and in Zen Monster, Volt, Kalalu, Poet Lore, Angles of Ascent, a Norton anthology, What I Say, Innovative Poetry by Black Writers in America, Kindergarten, Avant-Garde Poems, Plays, and Stories for Children, and I'll Drown My Book, a Collection of Conceptual Writing. Ooh, that's a lot of work. Singleton has taught at St. Mary's College, Naropa University, and in museums and schools throughout the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome, Giovanni.
Thank you.
You've done a lot, from the San Francisco Bay Area to Atlanta to Colorado and back again. Where are you from?
I was born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, and went to undergraduate school in Washington, D.C., where I majored in print journalism. And then I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area about 20 years ago for graduate school.
Where did you go to school?
I attended the New College of California in San Francisco, and I received my MFA there.
Oh, great. So did you study with David Meltzer and Neely Tchaikovsky? Who did you study with there?
I studied with David Meltzer. He actually was how I got through graduate school, along with the poets Gloria Frim and Lynn Hajinian.
So although your poetry has appeared in about a gazillion places, Ascension, I think, is your first full-length collection of poetry. Is that right?
That's correct. It is my first.
You were raised in Virginia. Yeah. When did you start writing, and did growing up there influence your writing in any way?
I started writing before I actually knew how to write, actually. From an early age, I remember holding pens and crayons and markers, all manner of writing implements, and I enjoyed playing with those more than with toys. And even before I knew the alphabet, making a mark, any mark, gave me a profound sense of freedom, which I don't really think that my surroundings gave me, particularly historically, you know, as the former capital of the Confederacy. Mm-hmm. So I was really interested in connecting to a sense of freedom from making all kinds of marks. And it helped me to understand that writing in that way requires a certain amount of courage, actually.
Turning to the book, one of the first things I have to mention is the cover. It is one of the most gorgeous covers of a book of poetry I've ever seen. How did you find that image? And it's The Cowrie Necklace by Albert Chong.
I first encountered the work of Albert Chong in 2004, I believe, in a group show at the San Jose Museum of Art. At the time, I was editing a literary magazine, Nocturnes, Review of the Literary Arts, and was always on the lookout for amazing visual art to use for the cover and also to include in the interior. And I encountered the cover image at Albert's website, as I continued to follow his work since that time. And I actually had in mind to use it as a cover for an issue of the magazine. But upon completing my book, I returned to the image. No, I want the image for myself in a way. And actually, it's a collage, but it's a part of a larger work that's actually entitled Ascension.
Well, you have several nice, what we call blurbs in the industry, on the back of the book. The one offered by Ed Roberson says that the majority of poems in the book were written during Alice Coltrane's 49-day transition through the bardo. So there are a couple of things to talk about here. First, Alice Coltrane, who was married to the jazz musician John Coltrane, but was really a fine musician herself, as well as a woman of a chosen spiritual path. I wonder if you would talk for a minute about why Alice Coltrane, and define for our listeners the use of the term bardo here, which I understand to be a transitional state.
So I encountered Alice Coltrane's music one day at a neighborhood record shop. I was living in the Mission, and I saw a CD of hers entitled Journey in Satchidananda. And just seeing her on the cover of a CD, I felt very, very drawn to her and figured she had something to say. I was also intrigued by the fact that she actually was a jazz instrumentalist. Many women in jazz tend to be vocalists. So I thought maybe she looked like she had something to say. So I bought the CD, I took it home, and it was still playing. When I was back at the record store looking for more music by her, I was really attracted by her connection between art and spirit and her spiritual practice. She was a spiritual leader and had a community, a Vedantic community in Southern California. So this was right after finishing graduate school, and I was sort of adrift. So I decided to go on a quest to meet Alice Coltrane, to find Alice Coltrane, only to discover that she had retired from public performance. So I continued to collect her albums because most of her music was out of print. It was not available on CD, with the exception of the two that I had. And so I continued listening and studying and trying to find out more about her. Until about 2006, when she came out of retirement. She ended her 25-year absence, and I was able to see her in concert in first at UCLA in February 2006, and then I attended her last concert in San Francisco in November 2006. I also visited her ashram. And the day that I was there, she had laryngitis, so she wasn't able to give a discourse. So she played the Wurlitzer organ in this tiny temple for about an hour nonstop. Oh. It was incredible, quite transcendent. So when she died in 2007, January 2007, I was really sort of crushed. And I also discovered that she had a connection with one of my poetry mentors, Lucille Clifton. Mm-hmm. They were quite close, and their kids dated. And so I was really sad. I did go to the ashram for her crossing over ceremony, but that wasn't enough. At that point, I had stopped writing, actually, for about 10 years. I had not been writing. So I took her death as an opportunity to see where I could re-enter that path, like actually find my own voice. And so for 49 days, which is the time Tibetan Buddhists believe that it takes for one to transition between a present life and the next life, I decided to sort of maintain a daily writing practice. And so that forms the basis of it.
One section of the book is written as if it's a musical suite. That's Melanin Suite, and each poem has a different shade of brown, burnt umber, sienna, etc. Tell me about that section of the book. It's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Well, I think for me that section was came about mainly in homage to the sort of palette that Alice Coltrane's music brought up for me, and looking at how one could explore identity as an African-American woman through music and through the relationships of words. So seeing words as sort of notes was how I sort of approached that section. It's like, you know, what would it sound like? You know, how could color have texture?
One of the most powerful aspects of the poems in the book might be described as nothingness. There is so much white space. The language is so spare, so quiet, and yet the end result is something that is extremely powerful, I think, in its intent. The portion of the book called Day 23 consists of just one line. Too much pruning brings misfortune. There is no misfortune in your work. Has this always been your writing style, or did you put this into practice especially for Ascension?
I think I put it into practice especially for Ascension. I've studied quite a lot the objectivist poets who used very spare language, as well as Japanese and other Asian poetries also influenced me. Is I want to see what is possible in the smallest word units and the smallest amount of words.
The final section is IEYE of the Beholder. And it's a serious little section, and it's very playful all at the same time. It is a disappearing letter I. The first page has uppercase I. That is it. The following page has lowercase I. That is it. The following page has the dot for the I. That's all. And then there's a blank page. Talk to me, Giovanni.
Well, I think that poem was my attempt to come to terms with a preoccupation of meditation, which is the dissolution of the I, of the ego. And so I thought I would render it visually and see what that would feel like and what it sound like and what the end result would be. And it's like, okay, you know, going back into the void from which we all come.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's really great. So let's actually open the book now and let our listeners hear you read firsthand what we've been talking about. This is Giovanni Singleton, and she is reading from her new book, Ascension.
January 13th, 2007, Day 2. Blues poet stands at the crossroads, framed in indigo light. He reaches his hand around to his left side, slits himself open as if to gut a fish. Once inside, he feels his heart, touches his liver. But he is not an oyster. He has not eaten sand. What then can a pearl be? January 17th, Day 6. First-person narrative. I am not for sale at any price. End of story. January 18th, Day 7. And just what color is blue? Names forgive their meaning. Sundays are for what a mind thinks. History of touching stretches out beneath the surface. The only way to sleep is to imagine it is raining. And it is raining. Wind blows open and over a final line of defense. What happens, happens far away. January 23rd, Day 12. Dead fox beside the road. The risk we all run. January 29th, Day 18. Because he disremembered the past bound itself to him. It creased his mouth, furrowed his brow, grayed his hair. When he spoke, his voice used the language of disremembering. Because he disremembered his ex-wife, their love bound itself to him. Whenever he turned around, one could see her face looking out from the back of his head. February 1st, Day 21. She went up the main road a ways. She did. A button fell from her one good dress. Sweat rolled slowly down her brow. It did. She looked and looked all around. She did. But she never came back. February 7th. Day 27. All that day, labored breath. The dead brushed against me, a litany of faces, their names beside. Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Tony K. Bambara, Mahalia Jackson, Shirley Ann Hempel, Isabel Sanford, Shirley Chisholm, Clara Ward, Nell Carter, Lynn Thigpen, Fantastic Gyre, Hours Struck, Memory Turned Upon Itself, Unable to Halt, Liberation, The Souls, Cast Iron, Clapper. February 15th, Day 35. When I was 9 years old, I killed a bird, he said. Why? I asked. Because I wanted to see what was inside. And did you see? I don't remember. Well, then close your eyes. Why? He asked. To see what's inside, I said. February 16th, Day 36. We are busy in wanting to push through light. The bowl I drink from says we humans keep cutting back the trees so that we alone can live. And I realize, too, just how much I don't want to be lost. February 19th, Day 39. Black girl, you a black girl. Black girl, play on blacktop, play. Girl, black, you a black girl. Jump down, turn around. Black girl, sing pretty song. You a black girl. Play on, merry-go-round, you. Black girl, look, merry-go-mad, you. Black, you girl. February 22nd, Day 42. In a fitful state, a neighbor swallowed the moon. People often wish to receive more than they give, pronounced the doctor, who weeks earlier had devoured 3 planets. February 27th, Day 47. Brown bark stems picked for pretty, bent forward bodies, tufts of white, floral arranged in 12-foot window, not meant to frame, now absent master, save the boll weevil in turns of earth, the unmercied blink, cotton ball eyes, their mournful songs, my own pricked fingers. March 1st, Day 49. Go, go, go into the forest, walk among the deer. 2 selections from Melanin Sweet. We, us and thou, voices sound a downtown destination. The boulevard, horns blow, fast and furious. Ghostly drummer makes flight. Some rap, tap, 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 conductor of multi-directional speaking. Crowds stand behind cranial walls, all smoke-filled. Boy, man, a vast expanse. Skeletal remains spread down on the ground as in quilted covering. 8th movement, Mahogany. Ecstatic song, escuchar, a mask in every note. Feather-fletched arrows due east, las palabras, a ceremonial gesture. Premonitions at the landscape's edge, palatial bed of wildflowers. Los ojos, an arc of rainbow light, la puerta, ears opening, a refrain as in Holy Ghost. And the last is a poem entitled Exodus. For the blue people, being so. All night about above, I go down, stare out at rushing water through open window. Ocean of starlit sky fills my head, unburdens the weight of my brain. Blooms a lotus flower. Its stem stretches up through the soles of my feet. pathway to the country inside me, its people seekers, naked in the smokeless clearing, stained glass maze, past lifetimes spent hunting crow. Here they go, here they go, here they go, astral stream of inky wings fluttering skyward. Echoes of ancient chants rise from the wooden cage in my throat. We are not this dance, but that one. Weather flashes across the backsides of my eyelids. We, me, and T-Monk too, fold up our chairs, go inside our cranial houses. This earth and soul, a flock of birds, where we are new, we are new, we are new to this body.
Giovanni, thank you so much for reading from Ascension. To hear you read it and to sometimes sing is a whole nother experience. Are you a musician yourself?
I would not say that, but I did and do play the clarinet, I admit.
Okay. It's hard to imagine you not writing over a span of 10 years, and I'm so glad that you have found your pen again. Why didn't you write for 10 full years?
Well, I started a meditation practice, and I really wanted to find out what I was made out of. As an individual, I think you bring yourself to your work, and, you know, to know the self is to forget the self. So I really had to find out and do some self-exploration. At least it turned out that way. I can say that in retrospect. But probably then I was caught up in survival mode of working, of trying to make a living, of trying to make sense of the world as a normal person.
Whatever that is.
Whatever that is, exactly, yes.
What are you working on now?
I am working now on a series of poems which has to do with how one's relationship to one's environment. So it's a series called Reflected, and it's a collection of poems, the titles of which are either self-portrait or still life. So things that move are still lives, and things that are inanimate are called self-portraits.
Thank you so much again for reading, Giovanni.
And thank you for having me. It's been wonderful.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you are listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. My next guest is the author of the bilingual book, My Mother's Necklace, El Color de Mi Madre, and her name is Lorena Papayone Wolfman. I'm going to start out by reading her bio that appears in her book. Lorena Papayone Wolfman was born in Boulder, Colorado. As the daughter of anthropologists, she spent her childhood traveling between the past and present cultures of the American Southwest and Mesoamerica. She has a master's degree in Spanish literature from San Francisco State University. Multimedia artist, teacher, and poet, she has been published and has performed internationally. She is a graduate of the Expressive Arts Program at the Tamalpa Institute, where she also serves on the board of directors. And welcome, Lorena Wolfman. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Happy to be here.
In your acknowledgments to your book, you thank your late mother for introducing you to Navajo poetry, mythology, and dance. Was your mother Navajo?
You know, there were many indigenous people who took her for being an indigenous woman, but she was not. She was born in Philadelphia and had a wide variety of ancestors, German, English, Welsh.
So how did the Navajo aspect come in?
I've asked myself that many times. It's very mysterious how she was with the earth and with indigenous peoples. I think perhaps there was some indigenous blood. She looked very Native American, and perhaps it was a family secret that didn't get passed down.
Mm-hmm. You grew up in Colorado and maybe some other states too, but were you raised speaking Spanish, or did you learn it from joining your parents on their travels? They were an archaeologist in there.
Yes. When I was 9 months old is when we moved to Mexico for the first time, and I wasn't yet speaking English, so my first language actually became Spanish. My mother was studying at the University of the Americas in Mexico City, and my father was teaching. And they left me all day with some women who took care of me during the day. So I immediately picked up Spanish.
Lucky you. You must have some pretty nice memories from that childhood.
I have amazing memories. In fact, I think the happiest years of my childhood, for sure, were in Mexico. It's a very inclusive, warm culture for children.
Mm-hmm. Did you always write the poems in English and then translate the poems you wrote to Spanish, or did you write some in Spanish first?
They are born in different ways. Sometimes I find that the inspiration begins in English, and perhaps a whole poem is born in English. Other times in Spanish, it may start with a phrase I hear in my mind or a feeling that I give words to, and it really varies. And then I work back and forth between the two languages, and I find that the poems in the process of translation actually begin to evolve.
Well, how much have your studies in Spanish literature influenced your poetry?
I would say tremendously, yeah. I don't know if it's any specific poet, but I think much of the sense of rhythm, musicality, certain types of imagery are certainly influenced by my Spanish studies.
Yeah, it's easy to see when reading your work. Why don't we start with you reading one of the shorter poems in Spanish first, and then
okay.
You can read it in English.
Sounds great. Ya no estás. Ya no estás aquí para que admiremos juntas la asombrada, purpúrea efervescencia de la jacaranda. ¿La estarás viendo de donde estés? ¿O eres tú ahí, en plena flor? No longer here. You are no longer here for us together to admire the amazed purple effervescence of a jacaranda tree. Do you see it from where you are? Or is that you there in full flower?
That's beautiful. Now, you dedicated the book to your mother. Was that poem also written to your mother?
Yes, very much so. And I later found out from an old family friend that the neighborhood where we lived in Mexico City had many jacaranda trees, which was something I didn't remember until she told me. So it was doubly significant.
I'll say. Well, why don't I turn the mic over to you now and just read a number of poems that you would like to read.
Sounds great. The green face of night. The green face of night blows through the stars, howls like a wolf at a locked door. Though she is master of open and close, she begs for gold coins. Though she is blessing beyond measure, she asks for forgiveness. Though she is reconciliation and the infinite salve that heals all wounds. The green face of night blows through the stars, longing eternally for what she never lost. She drinks with thirst, though she is a fount. She longs for her own face, though her essence overflows in even the most remote rooms of the universe. When she remembers who she is, green blows through the stars, the green face of night meets herself, green night, green face, blowing through green stars, green becomes green.
I said I wasn't going to interrupt you, but I'm going to, because of green, 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 this really bounces right off of Lorca, doesn't it?
Yes, very much so. And there's even rhythms within the poem that definitely have their echo in Lorca. My ribs fill up. My ribs fill up with emptiness. The night grabs hold and pulls hard, pulls me along with the moon into the void. The stars burn in their silent distance. The hours dissolve like bone into grains of sand. My body pours from my mouth like dust, like bone into sand, sand into dust, dust. Night dreaming. I am the indigo night, the night that dreams in silence, white hot fireflies going out just to light up again. I am the nude white woman under the sheets, the one searching for green apples, my pain tossed in a bundle by the bed, skin caressed by cotton. I search through my ribcase for more lightning bugs when they have all gone out, the smell of camphor, palo santo, and sage wafts into the room. I chant, Om Mani Padme Hum. I am the night I once danced when I dreamed of rain, and this night, my memory fills with another life when I danced on the gypsy's stage, sun bursting, pomegranate, papaya, and mango. I remember, but I shy from longing, scent of tangerine, jasmine, and bitter lime. I remember, and I fade into the clouds. I fade into the nimbi, where I find myself capturing butterflies and elusive stars. I chant, Om Mani Padme Hum. I have found a secret entrance, and from the door I watch visions fluttering like dragonflies in the night sky. Eyes closed, slipping on the cold gray stones of the past, the detour where I got lost. I chant, Om Mani Padme Hum. The sun's corona flares. Sense arises out of senselessness like a serpent out of the sea, like the eyes of Aphrodite, like clear sight for small things and large things. And now I understand. As I pull the prayer shawl of night around me and I hum and sway on the path of stars, spheres, worlds, galaxies, concepts of universe and God, I am the light that hurries towards the dawn of day to arrive before the songbirds burst forth. This one is inspired by weavers, by women who weave everywhere. When I was in Guatemala, I actually studied weaving on the backstrap loom. I think of my teacher. Weaving to the weavers everywhere. Weaving the sky to the night, weaving the earth to the day, weaving Arachne, Athena, Ishel, Pandora, Penelope, Nit, weave the night to the day, the earth to the sky, stars and glimmers, nooks and openings, crags and rocks, war and peace, comets and oceans, minerals and planets, skeletons and time, scales and mermaids, brooms and roads, candles and boudoirs, tenderness and life. Atoms and universe, the moray at their loom, weave a circumference of wholeness. My soul, their skein, my soul, their shuttle, my soul, their warp, my soul, owl, quetzal, spider, tree, morning glory, and jaguar, dancer and goddess. My soul works at the loom of life and dreams and desires across distances, new insights in proximity, new alchemies, underworld, darkness and war, wellspring, earth, peace. My weaver's soul, in her hands the threads of light, of wind, of rain, of music, of life, of illumination. My soul, in her hands the threads of the moon, of the sun and the spheres, where the witch goddesses move, Suna, Filomena, Tatsuna, Hime, the women of the violet winds, where the soul dissolves from one life into the next. And in this life, rises up and travels like the waves of the ocean, always new.
You have a poem in here that reminds me of Cubist poetry.
Very much. Very
yeah,
much.
Yeah. And that is yeah. Wind Woman.
Yes.
Talk just for a minute about where this came from, how you chose this almost a form for this poem.
Yes. I have to say Gertrude Stein.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Pablo Picasso.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
That's exactly, you know, it's exactly where it took me when I read it.
Yeah, yeah. It was one of the very last poems that I actually wrote specifically for this book. Literally, I had a page I needed to fill up to get the right division of number of pages for the book.
I totally understand. Well, it was worth it. Why don't you read Wind Woman?
Okay, very good.
Funny how these things come about.
Well, the inspiration hits, you know?
Yeah.
The muse was with me. Wind Woman. She is a woman. She is a woman who speaks. She is a woman who speaks with the wind. She is the woman who is speaking. She speaks. She speaks with the woman who spoke with the wind. The woman who spoke with the wind is speaking. She is a woman speaking with the wind. She is a woman who, having spoken with the wind, still speaks. She, having spoken with the wind, is a woman speaking. She is a wind-speaking woman. She spoke. She spoke with she who spoke with the wind. She had spoken for a long time with the wind-speaking woman. The wind-speaking woman was speaking for a long time with the woman who will soon speak with the wind. She spoke with she who spoke with the wind. She spoke with the wind woman. She was the one who spoke. She spoke with she who had spoken. The wind who had spoken spoke again. The wind was speaking. She had spoken for a long time to the woman speaking. Speaking, she spoke. She who has spoken speaks now. Mother and Daughter Poem. Breathe, breathe, body of mine. My breath is a somersaulting double helix reaching into the universe. Mother, mother who art in heaven with my own mother, the one who made a place for me in her womb. In and out, a stealthy serpent without end, salamander, sun, rhythmic flux, rise and fall. Breathe, breathe, body of mine. Beat, heart of mine, beat, don't stop. Blood courses through these veins. This is from a new collection I'm working on called Ruckus of Dreams. The moon shimmers everywhere. She bangs her pans and platters and rattles windows. She counts the 10,000 things. She returns an invisible sun with her gaze. Her shrill cry shivers with joy as it lights up the dark shoulders of the night where the ancient tricksters are raising a ruckus of dreams and nightmares. Songs for the day to borrow, to make its dress of mirrors. The moon shimmers everywhere, dancing and wailing until dawn. One more from the new collection. This rain. I need to feel the sound of rain, this explosion of thunder turning the clouds of my heart into turbulent song, traveling the lengths of the earth. Silver, gray, and shadow bursting over the sea and land, a crescendoing cascade of water eloping with my skin.
The book that you're reading from, well, not the last two poems, those are brand new poems, but the previous poems from My Mother's Necklace was published by Lapis Lazuli Editions. Your blog is also Lapis Lazuli. Have you started a new small press for multicultural poetry?
Yes, I have started a small press for multicultural poetry. Yes, very much so.
Great. So the new poems that you're reading, are they also going to be published by Lapis Lazuli?
I have a couple of offers from different a press in Peru and one in Guatemala. So I'm not sure if I'm going to go with one of those casas editoriales or if I'm going to go under Lapis Lazuli again.
Yeah, the importance is just getting them out in the world. Yes. I don't care how they show up, right? It's a beautiful book. Tell me about the image on the cover of My Mother's Necklace.
Yes, well, this is Kali, the fierce goddess. And it is also, My Mother's Necklace is also the title of the final poem in the book and has great significance. My mother, as an anthropologist and a feminist, was a lover of all of the great goddess mythologies around the world. And Kali was a very significant goddess, and I think very apropos of these times.
Why don't you read that last poem?
Oh, sure. My Mother's Necklace. The ocean that courses through my veins responds to the call of the moon. All night long I count the beads in Kali's necklace, beads of blood, of lamentation. Kali, the black one, tongue of forbidden fire, beyond rot and stench, beyond burned earth and death, beyond time, beyond form, I count the beads in Coatlicue's necklace, Coatlicue of the serpent skirt, mother of the gods, womb and grave, moon and stars and war. Her stridents and clamor, trumpets and hand drums, sound in the west. I count the beads in the necklace of life and death, eternity beyond form. I sit before Coatlicue and Kali as each one rattles and shakes her collected skulls and plundered hearts. Pain and heartache and change. It was for these times my mother left me a necklace carved of the small ivory branches of her hands and feet, phalanges branching into roots, a filigree of veins embedded into the night sky, earth's womb. I count the beads of my mother's necklace all night long. Delicacy and bone, and deep and bone, and absence and bone, and flame and bone. Now, here, me, gone, all one. Strong medicine for troubled times. My blood flows with the rose sea salt she gave me for all times. All time, ivory, pearl, cloud, hurricane, and marrow that builds the world anew at the light of dawn.
Thank you so much. That is just gorgeous. Again, this is Lorena Papayoni-Wolfman reading from her new collection, My Mother's Necklace. If anyone has any questions or comments about this, contact me at khastings@wordtemple.com. And Lorena, thank you so much for coming today.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
This is Catherine Hastings, and you're listening to Word Temple on KRCB 91.1 FM. I am recording this segment of the program from Windsor. Mary Jackson is a director of the Town Green Village Association, the art gallery coordinator for the board, and a resident of Town Green Village in Windsor. For the past 1.5 years, Windsor has benefited greatly from the art scene in Town Green Village. As a result of a poor economy. So, Mary Jackson, what has happened here?
Well, about 1.5 years ago, we had, like many communities, we had abnormally high vacancy rates in our retail units. And the Town Green is a mixed-use community. So all of the first floor of all of our 19 acres here are comprised of businesses, and then the residents live upstairs. So when the businesses started to go under and left the Town Green, we were left with something of a ghost town. So we were, began to fill them up. I happened to be on the board of directors, which made it a little bit easier for me to know what was coming up and what was available and to establish a relationship with the owner of the property. We started with one empty storefront, and that was housing my husband's photography for about 3 months, and it became overwhelming to run a gallery with just two people. So we opened it up to the Windsor Art Council, and that was the beginning of just a beautiful journey with not only the Windsor Art Council, but four other galleries as well. So we've had them running for a year and a half. The galleries, I think anybody that wants to do this in their community needs to come to a good understanding with the owner of the property. Nobody wants their property to be in worse shape when they give it to you than when they get it back, when they lease it or sell it. So a contract was developed to keep all of the galleries in line with the other businesses in town. And this would be true of any community that wanted to set up a gallery. In other words, the windows needed to be kept clean, the storefronts needed to be swept, the lights needed to be on, and the doors needed to be open.
Well, I discovered what was going on here because I had a poetry reading in one of the galleries when What Redwoods Know, Poems from California State Parks, came out. We were raising money for the state parks. So, I mean, it was just a wonderful event. The gallery was gorgeous, and it's really nice to know these galleries are here. But ironically, now that the economy seems to be improving a bit, you may be losing some space.
We are. The banks are reclaiming. Many of our gallery spaces have been in a state of limbo while they went toward foreclosure. And now that the banks are beginning to settle and the foreclosures are being wrapped up, we are we have three galleries now, and I'm not sure how long we'll have two of them. The Windsor Art Council, ironically, after a year on the town green, they were able to lease a space. So investors are indeed moving in to purchase the spaces now that they're being sold at a very good rate. And one of those investors was good enough to turn around and lease it back to the Windsor Art Council and specifically create a space that they could afford. So that was through the generosity of a citizen, of somebody in the community, that we got this chance. The other galleries, unless we can find some more space in the town green for them to set up shop, I don't know how long they're going to be here.
So if you were to put a cry out to the community right now, what would you say? Oh. What do you need?
Oh, what we need is a property owner, someone who owns some retail space, who is willing to enter into a contract with a nonprofit, a group of artists, enabling the artists to show their work. And remember, an art gallery is a very low impact business. So this isn't like somebody moving into your space that's going to put up shelves and want to do strange lighting or want to reorganize it in any way. So what is needed is a property owner who sees the benefit in having his storefront kept open and alive and active and in exchange for giving the artist a chance to show their work.
And I might add that having these galleries open in this area has brought in so many people. There has been a real vibrant community created as a result of these galleries. So if there is anybody out there listening who would like to help keep art galleries open in the beautiful town green of Windsor, you can contact Mary Jackson. And where can they reach you?
A phone number would be great, 707-838-7097, or email jackson1, as in the number one, at sonic.net. And excuse me, I do just want to add on to your comment about community interaction. We are scheduled, the Phantom Galleries in the Town Green, we're scheduled to host the Digital Photography Art Show and host the winning photographs from students who have entered into this digital art competition through Windsor High School. We're going to be hosting their work the month of May. We have also offered art classes and pottery classes for children and adults. We've had poetry readings, which is where you and I were able to meet. The galleries cannot just be used for as places to show their art, but they can be used for community event. The Chamber of Commerce has set up a mixer in one of our galleries. They've been used for speakers for various events. So there isn't any reason that space can't be utilized by the whole community.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Mary Jackson.
Oh, thank you.
Good luck. This is Catherine Hastings. You've been listening to Word Temple. Thanks for listening.